Probably some of this was already read this morning, but we're going to read it again. Thank you for Bob Hollis Sr. reading. He's got a great voice. I tried to get James Earl Jones, but he was booked, so you were the second on the list. That's pretty good, huh? Because, you know, James Earl Jones, you know, he was in Michigan. He actually went to school in Michigan. Do you guys know that? I don't know if you know that. Anyway, that's beside the point. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, and he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of the people of Israel." Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him." After they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went up ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. And when they saw the star, they were overjoyed. And on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. And they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and of incense and of myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. Just like our wise men here. What did they do? They came down here, but they went down the elevator. They were so excited about going down the elevator. Well, the talent scouts, they were on the lookout for him. And every teenage boy was hoping that he was going to be the next best thing on the radar. The families were hoping too. You see, there's this little island not too far from the United States. It's called the Dominican Republic. And it's poverty-stricken. But it's a greenhouse for the production of Major League Baseball players. I bet you didn't know that. They produce more Major League Baseball players in the Dominican Republic than any other country outside the United States. There are very few ways to get out of the poverty of living in the Dominican Republic. One way is to give birth to a son who eventually will throw a baseball 95 miles an hour, or perhaps can hit a curveball. For young men growing up in this island, baseball is really a blessing and a curse for them. It's a blessing because if they get on with even a minor league team, they will make hundred times more than they would ever make trying to make a living in their homeland. But it's also a curse for them, because many of the teenage boys there will quit high school and try to focus their entire energy on becoming a baseball player. And many don't ever make it. Their dreams are shattered, their family savings spent, and then they end up taking on the life of a vagabond. People will point to them on the streets and say, "He was a good baseball player once." Some of the players, they actually do make incredibly eye-popping contracts. A few years ago, there was a Dominican Republic baseball player that made $4 million just to sign with a team. And that was before he ever threw a baseball on American soil. It was the biggest contract ever landed by a boy from the Dominican. They call them bonus babies. That's what they're called. People, these baseball players who have yet to play professional baseball in America but sign with these major league teams. This one happened to be 6'7", and he could throw he had a great curveball and a blazing fastball. But the question is, will he ever make it to the majors? Time will tell. Will the scouts' prediction pay off? We don't know. But all the baseball player knows is that now his family is well off financially for the rest of their lives. Now the question you might be asking me this morning, "Pastor, What are you talking about baseball in the middle of winter for? What are you doing? Planning a trip to the Caribbean? I wish, but no, I'm not. But here's the thing. In a strange sense, the baby Jesus, he's like the bonus baby. After all, the scouts did discover him. At a very early age, in a small, obscure village in the town of Bethlehem. And as soon as they saw him, they immediately recognized him as he was a very special person. This was most likely due to the fact that there was a big star hanging over his house, that they followed him there. And after finding him, what did they do? They offered him not a big contract, but they offered him treasures, didn't they? Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And like good scouts, they kept their newly discovered prospect under wraps. They didn't want to tell anybody. They kept it a secret. For a while, anyway. But think about this for a moment. From a productivity level, what had the baby Jesus done since he had been on earth? Nothing. All he could do was coo and giggle and all those things that little babies do. And of course, he made his mom and dad lose a lot of sleep, too, because they had to move from Bethlehem to Egypt and then back to Nazareth in Galilee, so they did a bunch of traveling. And yet the scouts, or more correctly, the Magi, they knew this one had awesome potential. He was going to be a king. By the way, do you know much about the Magi? Who were these men from the east who visited this newborn king? And why would they know anything about a Jewish king when, in fact, these men were Gentiles? For these answers, guess what? We have to dust off our ancient history textbooks and dig in a little bit. And according to scholars, we learn that the Magi appeared first around the 7th century B.C. They were a tribe in eastern Mesopotamia. And many historians consider the Magi as actually descendants of Noah's son Shem. It may also be that they were from the same area as Abraham, where he said he was from the Ur of the Chaldeans. Whatever the origin, the term Magi became associated with the priesthood of the tribe. And it was interesting to note that these wise men held a similar belief as the Jews, and that they believed in only one God. They had a monotheistic religion. And they had a sacrificial system that was similar to the Jewish people too, as God gave to the Israel through Moses. And though they were best known for their skills in astronomy, they also knew about agriculture and mathematics and history. And all this accumulated knowledge was very prominent, and they became a very prominent and powerful group in a certain country, the Medo-Persian country. And so they were referred to the wise men. Here's the interesting about the wise men. They were like the kingmakers. They approved who was going to be the next king in that empire. And if a person studied and did the disciplines and the religious, both the scientific and religious disciplines that they put forth, they would give them the stamp of approval. No wonder King Herod was more than slightly disturbed when the Magi showed up at his doorstep and asked that question, "Where is the one that is born King of the Jews?" This bothered Herod greatly, because he knew who these men were, and he knew that they were in a serious search for a king. Herod himself, he actually married a Jewish woman so that his rule would be more palatable to the Jewish people. But he was incredibly jealous and suspicious of anyone who threatened his position of power. For example, he actually killed his brother-in-law. He drowned his brother-in-law. He killed his wife and three of his own sons. And these acts were only exceeded by the fact that he gave the orders to have all the toddlers, the boy toddlers, killed around Bethlehem. But back to the Magi for a second. How had they know about this king to be born? Well, remember this. When the Jews were in exile in Babylon for 80 years, there was one young man that was taken prisoner, and his name was Daniel. And because of his ability to interpret the king's dreams, he rose to great power and authority and was even appointed ruler over the whole province of Babylon. And because of his great power and success, the Magi highly respected him. As a matter of fact, Daniel even saved the Magi's lives when he said they were not counted guilty when he was actually thrown into the lion's den. The Magi were let off the hook there. But in this time, Daniel taught the Magi about the one God and King who was coming. We read about it in Daniel chapter 7. Daniel had a vision, and he said this about the king. In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like the Son of Man, coming on the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority and glory and sovereign power. So Daniel taught the wise men, and this was handed down. And so they were looking for the Messiah. When you think about these words, that there'll be an everlasting kingdom, there'll be a dominion that will never end, that it will not pass away, that his kingdom will never be destroyed, Daniel said. Do these words sound familiar to anybody? Well, they are similar words found in the book of Isaiah, which is the most quoted Old Testament scripture that points to the birth of a king and a Messiah. Daniel said he was given authority and glory and sovereign power. Isaiah, what did he say? He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Daniel said all peoples and nations and every man in every language will worship him. Isaiah said of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end. Isaiah, he will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, upholding justice and righteousness from that time and forever. Daniel said, his kingdom will never be destroyed. I don't know about you, but do you hear an echo? Though Isaiah's words happened 200 years before Daniel's, it sounds like they could have been in the same room together discussing this. And though Daniel's vision is about a returning triumphant king, Isaiah writes about a meek and a mild baby born of a virgin. Guess what? These two images merge together to show one clear picture that what began in the manger, in the most humble of conditions, would have its fulfillment in the throne room of God. Listen to John's revelation, the last book of our Bible. It says, worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and wealth and wisdom and strength and glory. To him who sits on the throne, to the Lamb to be praise and honor and glory and power forever and ever. It looks like the scouts, like the Magi, were right. Their prediction was right. They hit the mother lode. This kid was something special, beyond special. Without any exaggeration, Jesus Christ blew away all our expectations. Jesus Christ, he is worth more gold and frankincense and myrrh than 10,000 worlds could ever bring to him. The Magi's gift given on that Christmas, that holy night, that was only a beginning. Now it's our turn. Starting today, let us recommit ourselves to honoring Christ's royalty. Gold, it's the symbol of royalty. If we honor him as king, it necessitates that we become his loyal subjects. We must pledge our allegiance to him as we would do to any rightful king. Likewise, let us acknowledge Christ's deity, God incarnate, God in the flesh, Frankincense, it symbolizes deity. It's a precious and aromatic quality, causes it to be used only for the most sacred occasions. In Old Testament times, it was stored in a special chamber in front of the temple and sprinkled on certain offerings as a symbol that the God's people desired to please Him. And I ask you today, how is it that we are to please God? It starts by relating to His Son in such a way that He receives all our glory, honor, and praise. We acknowledge Him in the same way that John the Baptist, Jesus Christ's cousin, acknowledged Him when he said, "Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world." Finally, let us honor Christ as our brother. He is our King. He is God. And He is also our brother. The Magi's gift of myrrh symbolizes Jesus Christ's humanity. Myrrh, along with all the other spices, was used to prepare a body for burial. Mixed with wine, it was an anesthetic to relieve pain and suffering. The author of Hebrews writes this about Jesus' humanity, saying, "For this reason, He had to be made like His brothers in every way, in order that He might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that He might make an atonement for the sins of the people." So there you have it. Our bonus babies all grown up now. He went and was born in the minors in Bethlehem. And now He's at the majors, God's right hand, where actually He started there in the first place. The truth be told, I believe people like celebrating Christmas. It's a lot better than celebrating Easter sometimes, because a baby in a manger, He's so non-threatening. He giggles, He coos, maybe He spits up on you. That's the worst He could do. But Christ, He's no longer in the manger. He's no longer on the cross. But He's sitting at the right hand of the Father in heaven. Once again, maker and ruler of the universe. His rightful place. Preparing to judge the nations. Ready to separate the sheep from the goats. Ready to separate the chaff from the wheat. Let us make sure that we're on the correct side of God's scales when it comes to judgment. And here's the kicker in all this. It is not anything we can do. It won't be due to anything we've done, but has everything to do with how we receive God's Son. If we receive God's Son with open arms and understand that Jesus' life was given to us and for us as an atonement for our sin, and that righteousness can only be ours if we accept Christ's righteousness, if we accept God's gift of forgiveness in His Son and His work on the cross, then by faith, the Bible teaches us that we will enter glory with Him when all things are said and done. That's the good news. But there's the bad news. If we reject Him, if we decide that there is another king, someone else out there more worthy of our worship and allegiance and praise, then we will suffer the consequences of our decision. And we will spend eternity separated from all that is good. That's what the Bible teaches. I know many today would like to change the Bible and just make it more palatable and make it more, whatever, appealing. But we don't We can't change truth. We have to live with truth. Sure, Christmas is a wonderful time to reflect upon God's amazing gift to the world, His Son. It's like taking out the old photo album and thumbing through the baby pictures. Do you ever do that anymore? Is it thumbing through your smartphone instead? I don't know how to do it. Now when I do that, I have to ask my wife, now which one is that? I forget. But Christ, He's fully grown. He is our God. He is our King. He is our brother. And thank God, He is our Savior. And He's calling each of us to worship and follow Him. Now my worship team got ahead of me and they sang the hymn that I was going to save for the end. So what are we singing now? I don't even know. 178? Well, Little Town of Bethlehem. Would you please stand with me as we sing 178? Llewellyn's coming up to play.